Welcome to episode 40, a big, tall 40-ounce of Rail Talk episodes for you. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm an ownership advisor at West Point Thoroughbreds. Pretty damn exhausted from last week at OBS, but I have a feeling John's going to perk me up with his special brand of humor.
Oh, Joe, it's so good to see you. I wish we were together. I was like reaching through the camera to try to like poke you, but it's not working. Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And, you know, Joe, it's the end of an era. I don't know if you realize that. Zach Wilson, the era of Zach Wilson is officially over in New York.
Wow. I can't. Where am I going to put all of those memories? Oh, yeah, that's right. Right out of my brain as soon as possible.
Were there any positive memories of Zach Wilson being the number two pick?
I remember a lot of number two, but I remember a lot of picks.
That's right. Congratulations, Denver. He's all yours. And how about the Knicks? The Knicks surprised.
They have to make a redux of that 30 for 30 when the Garden was Eden. That's what I'm hoping for this spring. Because that was about 1994. Right. And like, yeah.
Right.
So this could be Garden was Eden part two.
It could be. But meanwhile, McBride. So I have family in Morgantown, West Virginia, and they're big Mountaineer fans. And I watched McBride play in college, and he was brilliant. I couldn't believe he was a second round draft pick, but what do I know? But he's just taking it to the next level with this team.
Well, and that's the thing. Like they're a likable team because they don't have any superstars. They just got a lot of guys, a lot of glue guys. I love Josh Hart.
Yep.
Like he just does a little bit of everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Tibbs is a great coach for that team.
Great coach. Yeah. I remember. I think he was like really the architect behind that Celtics team that Doc Rivers got the credit for
right.
that won the championship. Like it's hard to get a whole new team to lock in like that defensively.
Yep.
They gave him most of the credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though they dumped the Gatorade on Doc Rivers. That was one of the funniest moments in sports history. Like you could tell these guys like hadn't won anything yet. Like guys, you don't dump Gatorade on a hardwood floor. Right, exactly. It's like 8 minutes left in the game. I know.
They couldn't even wait. They were so excited.
I know. It was adorable. Anything is possible. All right. So I mentioned this in the open, but OBS April is a long week in the world of West Point Thoroughbreds. I enjoy it a ton. We had a lot of great partners there. Obviously bought some terrific horses that are still for sale, a couple of them, if some partners happen to be listening and want to jump in. So it was a great, great week, but obviously a very tiring one. We want to bring you behind the scenes of what exactly goes into buying two-year-olds at the Ocala Breeders sale show, April sale, or any sale, including the Facing Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale, which is just around the corner. Going to be some big fireworks there, I'm sure. You know, our process is probably a little bit different than yours, John, but I'll just talk a little bit about the respect that I have for David and Gordo and Terry Finley and the buying team at West Point. They watch every single breeze. They have people there on the grounds weeks in advance watching the breezes, doing the biometric data gathering, doing the stride length data gathering, starting to do vet work. And by the time the horses actually go through the ring, they have a beat, I feel like, on every single horse. And that's not easy with 1,200 horses at that sale. So, you know, I always tell the partners that, like, listen, there's no guarantees that you're going to find a great horse. You know, this is still racing and still, to a certain extent, a crapshoot. But I always feel good that the due diligence that's been done when those horses come home and we syndicate them for the West Point partners, you can have 1,000% confidence in that no stone has been left unturned. But it's such an intense, involved process. John, I'm curious, like you guys, I say this with all sincerity, like I feel like you guys have punched above your weight for a long time, not just, you know, not in terms of the dollar amount, because you guys will spend a good amount, but just in terms of the amount of horses that you buy, I feel like you guys are in big races pretty much disproportionate to that. So you must have a little bit of a secret sauce or a little bit of a formula or a little bit of a protocol and procedure that you guys really like and really stick to.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that, Joe. That's really a great compliment. I mean, the easy answer without going into too much detail is we just watch to see what Terry and David do, and then we try to outbid them. That's a lot easier. But you know, we go through a similar process in the sense of we have people who are down there watching the horses gallop from the time that they set foot on that racetrack. So it's like a week and a half, 2 weeks before they even breeze. And that's when there's very few people there. The horses are relaxed. It's a relaxed atmosphere. And you can kind of get a feeling for what the horses' personalities are like. Are they skittish? Are they just laid back and it's not going to bother them? Because that takes mental energy, saps physical energy. You know, they only have so much available when they race. So if they're losing their shit pre-race, they're not going to finish well in the actual race itself. So I think that's of utmost importance. And then in this day and age, you have to have, you know, you're vetting the horses, but you have to have a veterinarian on your team who understands what you can and cannot live with. There's no perfect horse by the time they get to the two-year-old in training sale, because like any athlete, they're going to have strains. They're going to have little dings. They may have little issues that they've been trying to like kind of get over and overcome. And if they were perfect at that time, we couldn't afford them. I mean, they're just going to be, so many people are going to be looking for the absolute bulletproof, to look at vet report, that it's probably not, you know, available for us, that kind of a horse. So we've implemented and employed racetrack vets to look at the results and to do a video scope for us and to give us an idea of, okay, a horse has got this issue. What do you think? Is it going to be able to train through it? Is it going to need time off? Which again, we're not against giving horses time off, where other programs may have to continue to push through because they don't have, you know, kind of deep enough pockets or they just don't have the patience to give a horse a little bit of time. So I think there's a lot of that. It's a lot of common sense. It's hard work, like you said. You have to unearth every single stone in order to know what's going on. And then it's a lot of common sense because we can't outbid everybody. So you have to be willing to take a shot on something else that other people won't. And Joe, our strategy changed almost 180 degrees from the week before the sale until the actual sale. We were not planning on going down there to buy horses. That's the God's honest truth. We were not going to buy horses at the sale because we had 42 two-year-olds. But when we heard that, you know, the self-proclaimed commissioner wasn't buying any horses and that John Stewart wasn't going to buy any two-year-olds, all of a sudden that's a game changer, because now it takes two of the biggest buyers out of the equation, people that you know we couldn't outbid. And now all of a sudden it's a more even playing field. And even though that was the case, when we did our show at Mark Cassie's and we were interviewing, you know, Terry and Len, and the fact that all four of us, me, you, Terry, and Len, were all at the same place, we compared notes. And that's how we ended up with this Tappet cult, because we were like, hey, we really like this Tappet cult. And you and Terry, I remember, were like, shit, yeah, we really like this Tappet cult. And we have notes from 2 weeks beforehand. We're like, we have notes from 2 weeks beforehand. You know, so it was just kind of like, it was very serendipitous, I guess is the word, yeah, I'm looking for. And we joined forces and we probably didn't need to. You guys can certainly afford to buy a horse for $300,000. We can buy a horse for $300,000. But it was great that we didn't have to go toe to toe and have somebody have to spend $500,000 for a horse when we can, yeah, pull our resources. And quite frankly, we enjoy having you guys as partners.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what I was going to bring up next, was that we have, like, we went back to the well, basically after OBS March, OBS April, we teamed up, West Point and DJ Stable teamed up on Hip 400, who is a Tappet colt, gray Tappet colt, just like Sandman, out of a really nice dam named My Wandy's Girl, who, if you remember, and this is going to tie into the next subject, but she was an import from Puerto Rico.
Right.
And from Mike Hushin, who was multiple graded stakes winning mare. And she was really nice. And, you know, like you said, we weren't expecting him to go for $300,000. Sandman was $1.2 million. Like, obviously, his family was a little bit stronger. Right. But I didn't think that there would be that big of a gap between Sandman and this horse, because this horse actually breezed, mm-hmm, went 21 flat, had a pretty nice, powerful, long stride. So I just think sometimes I think what happens in certain cases is people want a horse that's ready to race right now. Like right now, like we'll get them right on a racetrack. We'll race them in 30 days, 30, 40, 45 days. I don't think that's the case with him. I think he's going to take a little bit of time and just to grow up and mature a little bit, as you do see the Tappets sometimes need to. Sandman obviously is further along because he's already breezed four times, as we saw on last week's show.
Right.
But yeah, you just see like in the sale, if every box is checked, as they say, the horse will go for 1.9 million like the Tis the Law filly did.
Right.
But if there's one little thing, the horse like needs a little bit more conditioning or this and that, like you can get a real steal. And yeah, John, what was your impression of that horse and why we only got him for quote in quotes here only
right.
$300,000.
Yeah. I think it's what you said. He's going to need a little bit more time than other horses. And when I say a little bit more time, I mean, he's probably going to race in the fall. It's not like he's going to be, you know, an April 3-year-old that we're really concerned about. But I really think that it had more to do with the fact that there were less buyers there at that level than there were at the previous sale, you know, where there were so many people that, especially because, again, the Lothenbach horse, Sandman, galloped, and mm-hmm. that left Rapoli in the mix. This horse, he said, I am not buying any horse that breezes, period, end of sentence. So he was out, and John Stewart was out, and then when you look at who the other top five buyers would be, Spendthrift wasn't interested in the horse because they were actually buying an Into Mischief for a lot of money. It wasn't the kind of horse that Bob Baffert and his team liked for a multiple of reasons. And he doesn't really buy a lot of Tappets, I've noticed. And, you know, it's not his kind of horse.
No.
So
who? 21 flat might as well be 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's right.
Baffert and his buyers.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like they're looking for the 9-3, 20, and that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. And the right now horse. They want right. a horse that is peaked at that point. And it's worked for them. That's fine. But otherwise, you know, who were the big buyers that were going to be going after a quarter of a million, $300,000, $400,000 horse? There weren't too many dance partners left. It was like us and you guys. So the fact that we partnered up, I think, you know, unfortunately for the seller, it took money out of his or her pocket. But it worked really well for us.
Rail Talk is sponsored by The Green Group. Man, was it fun sitting down with Len last week at the Ocala sale. John's laughing as if I'm being sarcastic.
I'm reminiscing about the good times that we had with Len because he was so funny when we were talking to him about that. And you say, funny in taxes, how can that be?
Yeah. No, he's in rare form. And I never get tired of seeing him around the sales grounds or at the racetrack. And he goes, aren't you that guy from Rail Talk? it always makes me laugh. And, you know, obviously Len's gifts go beyond just his humor, although we do appreciate it. He runs the most successful horse accounting firm in the business, number one accounting firm in the horse business. In fact, there's one reason. No other CPA firm knows the horse industry like they do. DJ Stable owns over 200 horses, won over 2,500 races. They're approaching 1,000. Clients in the horse business, which we just learned last week, which is an astounding number. So shout out to Len and the Green Group for all their hard work. But you don't got to take it from me. Listen to these people, major movers and shakers in the business, in fact, that Len and the Green Group have helped.
Choosing the Green Group was all about that Mr. Green was so invested in the industry. He was a horse person. He understood clearly what we went through, the ups and downs of the industry.
I mean, they're just experts in the equine industry, in taxes and advice. They just know exactly what is allowed, what can be done, how things can be depreciated.
We swapped over recently and it's been great, you know, work with him and the team and to really just deep dive things and assess to make sure we're making the right moves.
Green Group has been doing our taxes for about the last 5 years. Well, I think what the Green Group can offer you is their knowledge of the business, some, you know, tax incentives and certain areas of the business that apply only to horse racing.
I originally started training for them and then moved everything to them like 6 months later. I let them handle everything and you don't have to worry at night.
So, I mean, that's an all-star lineup of clients that the Green Group has accrued over the years and obviously done right by. Special offer for listeners of Rail Talk. You got a complimentary confidential half hour consultation with Len who guarantees you'll get value. Call him up 732-634-5100 or go to greenco.com to redeem that special complimentary offer. So we got a tag team of guests here today, and what better tag team could you possibly have than the president and CEO of Fasig Tipton, Boyd Browning, and the director of client relations at Facing Tipton, Anna Seitz. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much.
We're so happy to have you. We loved talking to you guys last summer at Saratoga. We're hoping to see you up there again sometime this summer. But let's talk before we talk about the physical sales that you guys have coming up, because it's a star-studded lineup of sales. The digital sales is something that I think that you guys have really been on the forefront of, and we keep seeing those platforms grow across the sale industry. But you guys were really, I think, the first ones to step out and start doing that. Can you talk about the benefits, first of all, of hosting a digital sale and just the response that you've seen from the industry to the point where now you pretty much have one every single month?
And we aren't the first. I mean, I hate to say it, but Inglis was the first to really do it. But we've
in America.
We've been the first. Yes. So they've grown, started last February, and they've grown, like, I'd say beyond what we'd expected. I think it took a little while for people to get comfortable with the platform and to understand how it all works. But now, you know, people are calling us constantly wanting to use it because it's so simple. The horses don't have, as you guys both know very well, the horses don't have to come out of training. The mares don't have to leave the farms. It's just such an easy platform to use. And we try to make it pretty simple for both the buyers and the sellers on our website.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, clearly a couple of things that we were looking for in the digital space was, A, to create liquidity. We all know that traditionally the markets have been pretty set, and really there was like three cycles. You had two-year-old sales cycle, you had year-end sales cycle, you had a mixed sales cycle. And, you know, at times there's needs to sell horses that don't fit into that traditional calendar slot, and the digital platform has certainly created liquidity for all types of horses. And the other thing is it's a natural setup when you have an update, when you have something immediate, when you have a horse that jumps up there and creates a sense of what I refer to as currency. There's nothing like a current horse. When people say, hey, I just saw that horse run a couple weeks ago, whether it's a horse itself, whether it's his or her dam, half brother, half sister, something along those lines. So those are really two of the key components. And traditionally, the other segment of the market that we really tried to tap into was the horse of racing age segment. You know, we saw that, you know, traditionally there's been only a few slots on the calendar year to sell horses of racing age. And there's a need really for those horses to have the ability to be moved throughout the whole year. And the digital platform has certainly been a great alternative and a very viable source for both buyers and sellers alike with racehorses.
Right. And you talk about, you know, an immediate change of paradigm, whether it's a horse running well or a situation like the Lothenbach dispersal, where in the past, you know, a big operation like that owned a multitude of horses in various sectors, racing, breeding, training, and they would have to wait a calendar year, maybe even more, depending on when they decided to sell. And it would just kind of draw out that process. But you guys have been able to consolidate that into a one-stop shop for a big operation like that. When you guys, when people reach out to you and say, I have horses I want to enter onto the digital platform, like they must be doing for this upcoming sale, is there something in particular that you're looking for in order to kind of whet people's appetite?
Really, I think we're looking for quality and or quantity. I mean, you just want to make sure that you, when you look at the pedigree or you look at the race record, that you feel like it's got, there'll be viable interest in the horse. And we'll clearly sell horses and the next sale that we have for $7,500 to $10,000. And we'll hopefully sell horses that, you know, for $300,000 to $500,000. The most recent sale we had the highest price we've achieved was $660,000. So it's really just, you know, horses that make sense, whether there's a need and a demand for that horse. And it's kind of a gut reaction, but you just want to make sure, you know, to create value for the seller and to make sure that we're doing the right thing, that we think that the horse will fit and there'll be legitimate interest in that horse.
Right. And you guys have been so successful in the digital sale. And then Anna, what would prompt you guys to have something like a flash sale for like a one-off?
A really good horse that maybe breaks his maiden impressively, a horse that's going to be pointing for a big stakes race, the dam of a horse that's current, and maybe there isn't going to be another digital sale for another month, and they want to sell that horse right now because they're willing to sell before the next stakes race. So it has to be something very current and very exciting that's going to want to get a lot of buyers to go after it right away.
Well, that tees me up for my next question, because we're going to get ready to have a little bit of an announcement here. Some synergy between Mr. John Green and Len Green and DJ Stable and Facing Tipton for a flash sale coming up. Boyd, I'll toss it to you. And then, John, if you want, you can follow up. What's the next flash sale and why do I care so much? I guess it must have a relation to my co-host.
Well, I think we're very pleased and honored to have the opportunity to sell a very exciting 2-year-old colt named Mensa. Broke his maiden just in a dominant fashion, and his first start is pointed towards the stake, the 2-year-old stake at Churchill Downs on Thurby. Mensa, you know, was by an exciting young stallion in complexity. Got a very legitimate pedigree, two horses and have black type runners in the first dam. Just, you know, he fits the mold perfectly for what we're trying to do. Gives a man or a woman or a couple or a partnership or whoever it happens to be immediate action in the most exciting weekend in North America racing, bar the Breeders' Cup. And whether the Derby or the Breeders' Cup is more exciting, we're going to be politically correct and say one of the two most exciting weekends. But it's, you know, it's an unbelievable opportunity to have one of the favorites for an important stake race on a Derby undercard. So it's a great scenario. Horse is a very legitimate, ran, you know, not only did it have a, you know, fast time, ran good numbers. It's the kind of horse where, like, the private marketplace, I'm sure that John and DJ and Mr. Green have gotten a lot of inquiries about the horse. And one of the beauties of the digital platform is that what we believe in the auction platform is that we expose that horse to every buyer in the world that has an opportunity to bid and let the buyers decide the value. And it creates the energy, it creates the enthusiasm. It creates the competitive spirit that we love in the auction process.
Yep. And Joe, the nice thing about it is, you know, over the past couple of years, we've been more and more proactive about selling our top assets, whether it's horses, yearlings at the Saratoga sale, or Wonder Wheel in the Night of the Stars. And we're letting the market kind of dictate exactly the value of the horse. And yes, we buy a lot of good horses, but we're also business people. And we have to recognize that there are opportunities to take advantage of the marketplace. And this is one of them. I mean, obviously, if the horse doesn't bring what we collectively agree, he'll run in our colors and be one of the favorites, if not the favorite, for the Kentucky Juvenile race. But it's a situation where, you know, people see that we win with a horse first time out. And yeah, we get a couple of inquiries, but we're not getting the kind of inquiries that we would if it was, you know, if it was somebody that pinhooks horses, for example, on a regular basis. So this opportunity gives us the event, the signature event, to sell this horse to the market and let the marketplace know that, you know, that the horse is available. It's not going to be an unreasonable expectation as far as a reserve. And if we get the kind of money that we're hoping to get, and I think Fasic and TaylorMade, both of our sponsors, have been very proactive as far as trying to get a reserve that's realistic. You know, if they buy the horse, they will literally be able to watch their horse run with their colors on Kentucky Derby weekend. I mean, what can be better than that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a unique opportunity. And, you know, like I said at the outset, Fasic is the place to go for these kind of opportunities, one-off opportunities, digital sales. Let's talk about the physical sales for a second, because we've seen an evolution in the past several years of the 2-year-old sales. You know, you guys used to have the Facing Tipton Gulfstream sale. Now you've consolidated a little bit into the Facing Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale, which will be May 20th and 21st. We lovingly call that the Crab Cake sale over at West Point Thoroughbreds. That's right after the Preakness in Maryland. And I'll start with you. You know, you've been at Facing for a little while now. You know, how have you seen that sale grow to the point where we've seen so many flashy numbers, multi-million dollar horses to come out of that sale and win grade one races? Like, what has the effort been like to get that sale to be as important as it is now?
I think a big selling factor for that sale is it's on dirt. It's only the May sale and the June sale are the only 2-year-old sales on dirt, which makes a lot of people feel very comfortable. They know what they're getting when they can watch the horse breeze over the dirt and watch them restrain over the dirt. So I think that's a big factor. But we have buyers coming from all over the world that now that maybe didn't used to point for this sale, that point for this sale, because that's a big reason they say that they want to come to it. So I think they're like, last year we sold Mage, was a Timonium graduate, wins a Kentucky Derby. So it sounds like we have a lot of people teed up to come up to the sale. It's fun. Like you said, it's right after the Preakness. Baltimore's fun. There's a lot of nice restaurants. You can go to the races, go to the sale. So it kind of all works really well together. So everybody sounds like they're ready. They're just waiting for their catalog to arrive. It's up online, but they'd be shipping out this week. So sounds like we've got a lot of buyers coming.
Yeah, Joe, let me interrupt. Forget the fun part. I was more interested in the fun. I think what's really helped the sale over the last 5 to 10 years is the tremendous success on the racetrack of sales graduates.
Right.
It's been a little who's who of horses that have had great success for a wide variety of trainers. And a lot of the top owners in the game have had great success at the Timonium sales. So it's, you know, for probably 10 years ago, it was kind of like an afterthought.
Yeah.
And now it's certainly a mainstream sale that a lot of consigners point their very best horses to. And a lot of buyers say, that's where I'm going to go shop and try to buy my very best 2-year-old sales prospect. So it's a, you know, knock on wood, we'll hope that the success continues with the sales graduates. It sure looks like that, you know, given the quality of horses that continue to go through that ring. And that's what really drives the sale is the quality of horses being presented. And then the results they're able to achieve on the racetrack after the sale.
Right. And you guys have quite a few rooting interests the first weekend of May. Anna, you want to jump through some of those?
We have in the Kentucky Derby, we have Sierra Leone, which is not a Saratoga graduate, the sale topper right. from Saratoga. We have Just a Touch. And in the Kentucky Oaks, we have Torpedo Anna. And
Torpedo Anna or Torpedo Anna?
Everybody thinks she's named after me because the owner is Brookdale Racing, which is sounds like Brookdale Farm. It actually has nothing to do with my family, but I am rooting for her because she is very fast. And Kitty picked out a nice one. So we're rooting for her. And we have a couple other graduates in the
Oaks. Well, we got another Derby entrance today. Grand Mo the First is a year end sale graduate. It looks like he's going to run in the Derby as well. So well represented. And we'll also plug a little bit that we're also the Derby weekend. We're pleased to be able to sponsor the La Troye Inn. It'll be the Fasig Tipton La Troye Inn for the next 3 years. So we'll be very visible at Churchill Downs with races and sales graduates both.
Yeah, I was just going to ask a quick follow up on that because it's not just the La Troye Inn. You guys are also sponsoring the Locust Grove and the Florida Lee. So pretty much the three most important races for fillies and mares in the spring and summer at Churchill Downs. Was there a particular reason that you guys focused on the filly races to sponsor?
The November sale.
Yeah, Joe, I know. Yeah.
We always sponsor the filly races. Yeah. That's leading up to the Oaks down at the fairgrounds. We sponsor that the series down there. We sponsor the races in New York with the turf series. So it's usually we kind of try and target those fillies so that we can sell them hopefully when they are ready to be sold.
We like Grand Stakes winning fillies for sure and mares.
Yep. And Joe, what you don't realize is that Anna has in her office, she's got a whiteboard with like, and Anna, you can explain it better than I could, because obviously you have it there, but it's so cool because when they get a horse in the sale, it's like a little party. They basically ring a bell and start highlighting everything. How many horses are on that board and what does it mean?
Oh, I have tons. I probably have Boyd started it, and it's just because you can put it right in front of you and you see all those horses' names and you can work on them, you know, all year round. But it is nice when someone commits a really nice filly or mare to the November sale. And you could check it off because it's like, well, that's exciting because you've been looking at it every day and you have built, or like we have built with you guys, John, you know, have built a relationship with the owners. So when they trust us to be able to sell, you know, it's almost like it's like family. So working with a family like that to be able to sell their nicest horses is pretty exciting for all of us here at Fasig Tipton. If they decide to keep a horse and not sell, we got to draw a line through it. But, you know, that's okay. Can't get them
all.
What
about the skull and crossbones? What does that mean?
We try to avoid those at all costs. Occasionally one will get the skull and the crossbones. And we don't like talking about that. But it gives you like it's kind of like your report card. When you look up there and you see like the circles of the stars next to the ones you've got. And then like you say, like right now I'm saying to myself, we're in the middle of yearling recruiting. We got a 2-year-old sale coming up. And I was literally staring at that board, my board 30 minutes ago saying, damn, I don't have enough horses circled right now. I got to get to work. So, but it's still 5 months away or 4.5, 4 months away,
and
5 months away from the sale. Yeah.
One might be on the cusp, you know, and so you put it, I put it off to the side and hope that horse will graduate into being one that we really want to go after. So it is like a report card kind of tracking their progress.
Yeah. And Joe, just for the record, the skull and crossbones doesn't mean that the horse is deceased. It means that it went to the other sale.
Well, thank you.
I want our audience to understand that's
right. Reeled it in from being too morbid.
Exactly. Hey, I did want to ask a question though, all kidding aside, because I know you're in competition with the other sales companies, but there was a big announcement a couple of weeks ago and Joe and I talked about it. You know, we were like school kids. We were so giddy about the fact that all three the sales companies got together and hammered out a very difficult and kind of drawn out negotiated rule change on medications. And again, kudos to you guys for spearheading that.
Well, I thank you for the kudos. I think it was certainly a collaborative effort amongst Phasic Tipton, OBS, and Keeneland. I mean, frankly, there are industry issues that are bigger than any one sales company, and there's things that we all have to do to improve the game. And I think that all of us that are involved in the business want to make it better. We want to improve it. We want to see long-term growth and long-term success in all aspects of our business. And, you know, clearly we've had some discussions with HISA last fall about, like, we have a lot of medication policies. We got a lot of testing policies in place. And periodically, we've all sat down together and tried to review those and see what changes and improvements we can make in that. So we sat down on a series of conversations, a lot of give and take, a lot of discussion, a lot of really good discussion. And I think that the best news is that, A, we were able to come to make some important changes to be implemented literally beginning in the July sale of the yearly sales cycle this year. But I think it also demonstrates a cooperative spirit amongst the three sales companies on a going forward basis to continue to monitor, to continue to see what changes are taking place within our industry and make sure that we're in tune with that and in touch with that. We get a lot more information. I think that we're all going to look towards, frankly, more scientific evidence driving some of those decisions. And I think that we all need as an industry to continue to pursue the scientific research, to be better educated, to know what are the effects of certain medications and what are the effects of certain procedures and how do we continue to present a viable product in a fair and honest way to both buyer and seller alike.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just a quick follow-up on that. You know, very, very good explanation of how we got to this point. But where did you guys leave it with the other sales companies, with Keeneland and OBS? Is this going to be a continued collaborative process in terms of instituting unified policies going forward? Like, where are you guys at after that first, obviously, landmark announcement?
Well, we've basically got an agreement on how we're going to proceed, starting with the yearly sale of 2024 for the July sale. I think that we basically have all made an agreement amongst ourselves that we're going to evaluate things literally at least on an annual basis. And if there becomes an issue that rears its head, like bisphosphonates a few years ago, I mean, that really was not on anybody's radar screen. And once there became a public education and outcry of, hey, what are we going to do on bisphosphonates? The three sales companies finally worked together quickly to address that issue. So I think that we're going to clearly get together basically on an annual basis, but we're not limited on an annual basis. If there's an issue that crops up next week, we'll see. We'll get together. The lines of communication are certainly open with Phasic Tipton, with Keeneland, with OBS, on a regular basis. I mean, we can pick up the phone and we can call them. They can pick up the phone and call us. And we're going to all strive together to make sure that we create the best possible sales environment. And then we're going to compete below that. But we're going to do the right thing by the horse across the board and try to make sure that we're doing that. And then beneath that, we'll all compete like heck against each other. But the horse comes first.
Absolutely. I mean, that's pretty much everything we wanted to cover on the business side. I got one quick question, though, for both of you. Anna, you can go first, and then Boyd. You know, we all have those horses that stick out in our mind, or those experiences stick out in our mind, you know, growing up, going to the racetrack, maybe cashing a win bet. I'm curious, you guys have been in this business for a long time, but there must have been that one spark along the way that led you on this path to obviously the great success you've had. Anna, was there a horse? Was there a moment? Can you remember one?
I have a lot of moments, but one that is very, very special to me was when I worked for Todd Pletcher and when Rags to Riches won the Belmont Stakes.
That's a good one.
Being around her every day and being a part of that team it's hard to explain. I remember standing in the winner's circle and I had never hyperventilated before. I didn't really know what that was, but I remember I couldn't breathe. I was so excited. She stumbled out of the gate, went down to her knee, and then to do what she did, it was like, it was just wild. And I remember Todd's assistant grabbing me and was like, "You got to breathe. What's happening?" It was just like, it was all a blur, but it was just, I guess I love the fillies too. It was just such a special moment for me and to be like, wow, that filly, she pushed through and she defied all the odds. So, I mean, in a strange way, I have to say, like, really good fillies kind of motivate me because, like, she really was something special.
And Boyd, what about you?
She has hyperventilated several times since then.
Since November sale.
I would like to add that it was not the last time she
I think I did that Monomoy girl. Boy, that had to grab me. He was like, what is going on?
You know, I think that just, you know, I didn't grow up in a horse business per se. So I didn't grow up, you know, going to the races and following horses. I didn't have a love affair with a particular horse, but one that gave a great deal of like personal satisfaction as a sales graduate was Vindication. We literally, Miss Patient told Bill Graves and I, listen, I want to sell a good horse at Saratoga. You all go pick out one and find one that you all really truly believe will sell well. And 99.9% of the credit goes to Bill, who, you know, clearly we went through the crop with her and said, this is the horse that we can sell really well. And then Satish bought the horse and obviously went on to win the Breeders' Cup and, you know, was his career as a stallion was prematurely cut short. But it was kind of in my fairly early years within Fasig Tipton. It was kind of like, here's the magic that can happen when you identify the right horse. They get, you know, they were prepped beautifully, sell beautifully, and it kind of creates the ultimate dream when a really expensive horse, you know, wins major races. And I swear I didn't do it like this, but, you know, it kind of creates, it's, you know, we got a chance of having a very similar experience happen in a few weeks, you know, in less than 2 weeks with Sierra Leone, a sales topping yearling. Bred by Mr. Miss Oxley. And I, you know, anybody that knows Mr. Miss Oxley are going to say class personified, great people, great supporters and advocates of the game, do everything the right way. Gave us the opportunity to go through some, look at some yearlings with Brian Graves. It kind of goes full circle. And, you know, Brian and Bain said, man, we love this Gunrunner colt. I think he could be a really special horse. And to see him go to Saratoga, bought by Peter Brandt and the Coolmore Group and Brooke Smith, trained by Chad Brown. And there's just lots of personal associations with a horse like that. Peter was a former owner of Fasig Tipton. Coolmore obviously has been a, you know, a titan of the industry and a big supporter as both a buyer and a seller. Brooke's a relative newcomer to the game, but anybody that meets Brooke, his enthusiasm is so infectious and contagious. And you know, we've known Chad. We've worked with Chad literally since his days as worked with Bobby Frankel. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people here within our building that would say, you know, Chad's our friend. So it's kind of, we've got an opportunity for a storybook situation coming up soon. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, it's been a great run already. But those are the kind of things that you take a lot of personal satisfaction and a lot of pride in seeing, you know, the horses that you work with and develop relationships with, to see those people achieve success. It's hard to explain to people who aren't in the horse business. I mean, I've had friends that sit over in my house, we're watching races and I'm screaming like an absolute idiot. And they're like, wow, did you own that horse? Or do you own something? I'm like, no, we sold it. Look at you. You're an idiot. Like, well, you don't understand.
Yeah, but it's got to be like your kids, like seeing your kids graduate and then go out into the real world and have success, right?
Yeah.
John, what about you? Of all the horses, was there a horse like that your dad had and your whole, what got you involved? I'm just curious. Am I allowed to ask the question?
It's absolutely. We're open forum. We're in an open book. I appreciate it. You know, it's funny. We actually talked about that at the last podcast. And I was just going to say before he asked me that question, Anna, was, you know, we've had our two greatest experiences in horse racing with Fasig. And that's when we bought Do It With Style out of the July New Sire Showcase, you know, back in the late 80s. And she was our first grade one winner. And then selling Wonder Wheel at the most recent Night of the Stars sale. So, you know, I would have to say that one, if not both of them, you bookended are the things that excite me the most about, you know, thinking back over the years in the industry. And again, it's not by chance that it happened with you guys. I mean, those things are there's a reason why we've been aligned, you know, with selling and also with buying Do With Style and then buying the sales topper at the most recent digital sales, because there's an inherent trust that we have with you guys. And you know, I wouldn't give that relationship away for anything. It's not just because you go and get your nails done with my wife. It's because you guys are true to your word and really know what you're talking about.
Thanks, John. We appreciate that.
I thought the connection couldn't go any deeper, but John just an extra little bit.
Open the curtain. We just
getting emotional here. Wow, that was very nice of you. Well, you guys are like family to us.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And Joe, by the way, I don't know if you know, but you know, Anna being speechless not only is unusual because she talks all the time, but also, you know, she was a state champion in basketball in high school. Did you know that?
No.
1999. I mean, I know I can't be that old, but yes, we just celebrated our 25-year anniversary. They had us down on the court at Rupp Arena a couple weeks ago to
state champion.
Right.
Can I ask a quick follow-up on that? And, how do you feel about the growth of women's basketball? Because I feel like it's exploded so much in recent years. You know, Caitlin Clark and all the great programs. Like, you must feel so proud.
Yes. I always told people, I always used to say, because my basketball team was fun to watch. And Boyd's daughter played basketball. And, you know, everybody said, oh, it's not the same. But women's basketball, I feel like they're really good at the fundamentals. It is really enjoyable to watch. And I think that this recent success of these women in Caitlin Clark especially have made women's basketball cool, and I think it's just awesome. So
you broke ceilings. You broke ceilings for that generation, Anna. That's what you got to remember.
Well, her game did not break. Her game.
A lot of dirty elbows. Yeah.
But, you know, it is amazing, and I think it's been kind of hard. I'm a girl dad. I got four daughters, so I'm I've coached a lot of bad basketball. I had some good players and had bad coaching and so forth, but. You know, when you look up and you see that the women's championship game outdrew the men's championship game, awesome. It goes to show you just, you know, how dramatically the world has changed. And it's really, really cool. It's really exciting. And, you know, I think that we're going to continue to see, you know, further changes and developments as we look at particularly amateur athletics moving forward. And hopefully the women's pro game will continue to grow, much like the soccer world has as well.
It's like the Phillies, yeah. Kentucky Oaks. How big is it?
See, I see what you did there. You went full circle, Anna. That was great.
Full circle back.
That's can't end it in a more perfect note than that. Boyd and Anna, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for the sponsorship. Keep doing what you do. You guys are trailblazers in the industry, and we appreciate you through and through.
Thank you. We're looking forward to selling Mensa. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, goes live in a couple of days. It goes live soon. Yep. Yeah. Check the page and get their website.
Let's do it. Get him a good number. God knows he needs the money.
He's number one. He's number one in your program, number one in your heart, right?
Rail Talk is sponsored by TaylorMade. Those summer yearling deadlines are fast approaching. I think by the time this airs, there'll be less than a week left to nominate for those sales. Obviously, TaylorMade does a great job at all the sales. The yearling sales are their particular focus. They do a phenomenal job every year taking care of the horses and the people as if they're family. And I kind of consider myself an honorary member of the Taylor family at this point. We're 40 episodes in. So, Joe, Bianca, Taylor. Yeah, that really goes well together. Don't you think, Joe?
Named after the patriarch, Joe Taylor. Papa Joe, right? Right?
Exactly. Yeah, no doubt. Exactly. No, but seriously, like the top class organization, as everybody who's ever dealt with them knows, top class business of people who have been in this for decades and have that hands-on experience with the horses. And they simply are the best at what they do. And that's why I believe, John, you got a horse, a pretty important horse, who's going to be consigned by TaylorMade.
So. Yeah, Joe, you know, we have Mensa in the private flash sale coming up through Fasig Tipton Online. It's a private digital sale just for him. And, you know, there was a lot of people have come up to me and said, hey, what does a consigner add value for when it comes to a digital sale? Because there's no brick and mortar. It's not like they have to have people show the horse. And I can tell you, at least from TaylorMade's standpoint, the tireless job they do in marketing these horses. So they're constantly marketing their group of tens of thousands of clients that they have, talking to them about, hey, here's a good horse and everything. They're narrowing it down to a group of maybe 20 or 25 trainers and talking to them physically on the phone, saying, here's the reasons why we like this horse. You know, it's been vetted out and it's going to run in the stake, and, you know, soon after you buy it, it's got a world of blue sky and green grass, but they're taking the extra steps to do that. Not to mention their videotaping and editing the walks, the gallops. They worked in close contact with Fasig Tipton to do little things like, Joe, they ordered a saddle towel just for Mensa. So that way, when the horse gallops and jogs on the racetrack the week before the race, people will know who it is as if it's like a derby horse. It's going to have a personalized saddle towel. I wouldn't have thought of that. That was all Fasig and TaylorMade in conjunction working together. So, you know, how does a consigner make, add value? when you're selling a horse digitally. Those are just a few of the many reasons why we love TaylorMade and why we trust them to sell brick and mortar and digital.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great point. And in addition to the horsemanship, having that creativity to sell these horses is a big part of getting the maximum return you can possibly get. So you get the total package with TaylorMade, and go check them out at TaylorMadeFarm.com.
Another thing like Joe Bianca, the total package.
Wanted to get in a little bit of news that happened, that broke a couple of weeks ago. There was some outcry on social media, especially about horses who have been shipped, who have been exported to Puerto Rico, ending up in pretty bad shape. And on that note, I want to shout out Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare, who do a great job. I remember them doing really yeoman's work with the horses when they had the hurricanes in Puerto Rico. But, and you know, in a larger sense, there's just, it just seems like the horse care is not up to par in Puerto Rico, and a lot of horses that get cast off from America end up there, end up in really bad shape, sometimes end up going to kill pens or just, you know, just in terrible physical shape. So a lot of them come from Gulfstream Park, which would make sense because, you know, proximity wise, Gulfstream is the closest major racetrack to Puerto Rico. So there was a little bit of pressure on First Racing and Gulfstream Park to do something about it. And I'm just going to read you a little bit from this press release that First Racing put out recently. It says, and it was addressed to Gulfstream Park's trainers and owners. It says, recently First and Gulfstream Park were contacted about by people concerned about horses who last raced at Gulfstream, subsequently sold for racing in Puerto Rico. There are significant concerns with aftercare for thoroughbred racehorses once they finish racing in Puerto Rico. And he said, we share the concerns of those individuals. In the past, Gulfstream and First Racing paid to ship some horses back to aftercare programs in the continental United States. However, it's much better for horse welfare and more effective for all of us to prevent horses from being sent to Puerto Rico, particularly those who no longer belong in racing due to injury, age, or poor performance. Going forward, the trainer and owner of record for any horse that last races at Gulfstream Park will be responsible for the cost of shipping a horse back to the United States. If it is shipped to Puerto Rico, they're going to review the number of horses that end up there from trainers and owners who have horses at Gulfstream Park on an annual basis. Even if those horses do not end up coming back to the United States, Gulfstream and First Racing reserves the right to mandate that a trainer and or owner make a donation for each horse to a TAA-accredited aftercare program. Moreover, trainers and owners with injured or infirm horses that end up in Puerto Rico may be subject to fines and loss of stalls at First Racing facilities. That last part, to me, is the only thing in there that really has any teeth. If you're going to start fining and taking stalls away from people who are responsible for horses that end up in terrible spots in Puerto Rico, then you might have a little bit of something. The other stuff is just, it's kind of nice, broad goals. But John, you know, you know a little bit more about owning horses and about the post racing career situations of horses. What's your reaction to this?
Well, Joe, let me start off by again complimenting the fact that a sector of the industry is trying to address a big problem. And it's a big problem not only for the horses and for their well-being, but let's call it spade a spade. It's also a terrible PR look for the industry to have horses in a different country that are starving, that are coming directly from one of the major racetracks in our industry. And again, I sincerely am happy that that First and Gulfstream are trying to get out and have some kind of a plan and a schedule for this. That being said, I'm going to disagree with you on one thing. They don't have the teeth or the ability to mandate that owners and trainers need to make donations, you know, to accredited aftercare if they send a horse to Puerto Rico and the horse subsequently is in a bad place. Nor do they have the ability to fine owners or trainers in accordance with their rules and conditions. I looked through the stall, the stall rental agreement, which is really the primary legal contract that that trainers and therefore by proxy owners have with Gulfstream Park. And there's no fine schedule that has to do with anything of horses going off premises. They just don't have the legal authority to do it. So for them to be able to say, we are going to reserve the right to mandate that you make a donation is bullshit, because they don't they can reserve the right, but they don't have the authority to do it. Unfortunately, they don't have the authority to do it. It's just not something that they can do. And to say that if somebody sends a horse to Puerto Rico and they may be subject to fines and loss of stalls, okay, I'm going to call a bluff. They had 600 plus empty stalls during the championship meet. Best meet, the best 4 months of racing at Gulfstream. And they had over 600 stalls that were empty. And they're scrambling to make 8 races a day to go. Are you going to honestly tell me that you're going to go to owners and say, or trainers and say, we're not going to recognize this entry because you sent a horse to Puerto Rico? It's just realistically, it's not going to happen. In a perfect world, I would love for it to happen. But in real world, it's not the case. Now, Joe, you know me very well, and you know that I hate to talk about when somebody proposes an idea and it's not the right idea without coming up with some other kind of a solution. Well, I know that the head of the Horsemen's Association from Florida and a veterinarian who is employed on Gulfstream's grounds and one of the higher ups from racing in Puerto Rico actually had multiple conversations and even an on-site meeting in the beginning of March. And they came up with a very simple answer and plan to deal with the issue of having horses come from America to Puerto Rico and not be able to race there. Because again, from Puerto Rico's standpoint, they don't want to buy bad horses. They don't want to buy horses that are at the end of their careers and have to force them to run. It's just, it's not a good investment for them either. So the three groups came together and actually came up with a really simple answer. And the really simple answer that they promoted to Gulfstream was, let's have a vet exam, a pre-sale vet exam that says that the horse is suitable for racing. It costs a couple hundred bucks to have a vet do that. And it takes all of the liability off of Gulfstream, all the liability off the selling owner and trainer, as far as are they selling a sound horse to a racing operation in Puerto Rico. So from a liability standpoint, they lose the liability, which is great. From a cost standpoint, it costs them innumerably less money to have a qualified veterinarian come in and say, this horse is suitable for racing or not suitable for racing. And Joe, let's just say the horse is not suitable for racing. Well, at that point, Gulfstream Park specifically has a wonderful person in charge of, on-site aftercare coordinations in Raina Gunderson. She's on call there at the racetrack almost 24/7. She does a wonderful job. All they do at that point, if a horse is unsound or not suitable for racing, is retire its papers, which it talks about in the press release. Jockey Club already has the ability for you as an owner to go online, check the box that says the horse is going to be retired, and therefore the horse is ineligible to race anywhere in the United States, including Puerto Rico. So that would solve the problem right there. It would be a win-win-win, and these horses wouldn't even have to go to Puerto Rico and have these toothless potential penalties that Gulfstream is promoting that say that we have the right to be able to decide if we're going to do this to you. It alleviates all the problems. Now, why didn't that get done? Well, I think, personally, because it's not as flashy as being able to say, we're going to fine you and we're not going to let you have it. It's just not sexy enough. But does it solve the problem? I think it solves the problem very easily. And that's what I would have liked to have seen, because, again, representatives from the Florida Horsemen, veterinarians, and racing at Puerto Rico all agreed to do this.
Yeah, solid solution. That's great. I agree with you in principle. I think, Gulfstream is kind of in a bind here, because that's, the main source of horses for Puerto Rico. Sure. I don't think Gulfstream loves the situation. I just think, they're kind of up between a rock and a hard place. Again, like with so many other fucking things in this business, like just do right by the horse.
Right.
Like I'm so tired of having to find these Rube Goldberg machine solutions to try to get around people not doing the right thing by the horses. Like that's just, it's exhausting, honestly, how many people will not do right by the horse. And that's one of the reasons I love working for West Point, is we do the right thing by the horses when they're done retiring. It should be the case across the board, man. Like, and I do think we're making a lot of progress on that, but just it's still tiring.
Right.
How many people just do not give two shits about what happens to the horse after they have outlived their usefulness to them. So
right.
that's I think is a fundamental problem, that it's just, there's just still fewer, but still too many people in this business who aren't in it for the right reasons. And I just want to give one more pop to the Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare. CTAHorse.com is the website. You can adopt through there. You can donate. You can sponsor them. And there, it's an uphill battle considering what happens and what we're learning more and more about what happens to horses that are in Puerto Rico. So shout out to them. And shout out to, like John said, to the people who are on Twitter and on social media bringing attention to this. Because, you know, like I'm saying, that goes with what I'm saying, that there are a lot of people who are banking on nobody's eyes being on these horses because they're not in the headlines. And thankfully, I think we have enough people in this industry who aren't stakeholders necessarily who have been on this watch.
Right. No question about it. And Joe, just if I can throw one thing out there, Raina Gunderson's phone number, it's in the condition book, but it's worth putting out there. If you have a question about on-site aftercare, she's an on-site aftercare coordinator at Gulfstream, 954-682-1294. Raina Gunderson, I've spoken to her. She comes to meetings. She gives us reports for the Florida Horsemen and just is such a wonderful individual and really cares about these horses. And there's not a higher compliment I can give her than just saying that she is a tremendous individual.
All right, so that's going to do it for this week's episode of Rail Talk. But we have a couple of shout outs that we want to make before we sign off. John?
Yeah, you go, Joe, for it. I want to make sure we shout this out. Very few people know that I actually have two sisters, not just Debbie in the D and DJ, but my oldest sister, Beth, who little, you know, very few people know that DJ actually has a silent B in it, okay, for Beth, because she's a silent partner in all this. But I saw Beth and, you know, I had dinner with her the other night and she said, John, you got to do me a favor. I have a friend of mine, Michael Talbin, who is a huge fan of the show. He's been a fan of ours for years and years, apparently. And he's going to get a surgical procedure done sometime in the next week or so. He's going to have time on his hands to be able to sit and watch all of the shows that he's missed. And I just wanted to give a special shout out to Michael and thank him for not only watching, but also being interactive and being a part of it. He reports back to my sister Beth about the good and the bad, about what we say and how funny and how serious and how intelligent I am and how funny you are. But Michael, the best of luck with your procedure. And thank you for being such a big fan.
Yes, sir. Yeah, no. Shout out to Michael. Hope the surgery goes well and recovery goes well. I mean, that's a tough ask to sit and listen to John Green for four or five straight episodes. So you must be a diehard fan. So we appreciate you tuning in. Could not do this show without you. We also could not have done this show or gotten to this point without Anthony LaRocca and Aaliyah LaRocca, who are moving on to another opportunity. So shout out to them. They've come up in the world a little bit. They're not slumming it with us anymore, but no, for real. Like they're the best. We know them all the way back from our TDN days. So appreciate you guys and all the work that you've put in. I know you guys will kill it for whatever you do next. But by the same token, we are so thrilled and so blessed to have Nathan Wilkinson and Julia Agresta as our associate producers. You know, Nathan, we know from back in the day as well. He does a terrific job. I remember Nathan from the first writer's room episode. Right. And Patty was like, if you screw anything up, just say, Nathan, I don't want that in the show. So he pays attention. And he has not let us down since.
Nope.
You know, years and years have gone by, and he always makes us look good. And Julia is a little bit newer to the operation, but she's awesome. And you're probably going to be even seeing a little bit of her on the show in the future. Multi-talented, multi-faceted woman that's on board with us and does an awesome job. She keeps it light. She's great on the editing side as well. So shout out to Nathan and shout out to Julia. We're so excited to continue working with you guys on this lovely podcast. So that'll do it for episode 40 of Rail Talk. Thank you to John Green. Thank you to our producer, Patty Wolf. Thank you to our outstanding associate producers, as I just mentioned, Nathan Wilkinson and Julia Agresta. Thank you, the viewers and the listeners, for tuning in, and the sponsors, Boyd Browning and Honest Sights, for stopping by the show. See you back here next week on Rail Talk.